2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce here. Another Baseball America Playoff podcast. We only have one game from yesterday to discuss today, thanks to rain, which also means we have a kind of crazy day today. And we're going to get into, we're going to analyze yesterday's Astros Mariners game in just a second. But one thing, I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent for a second here, which is, I know social media, especially Twitter, is a critical, is often critical. And I know that MLB does many things that are worthy of criticism. We criticize them ourselves at times. But one that I did find amazing was the reaction to the Yankees-Guardians game being rained out and the complaints that that left last night without playoff baseball succeeding the ground to football. And also the complaint that today's, Friday's, Guardians-Yankees game is going to be at 107. And to which I would say, everyone, it rained. Baseball and rain don't get along all that well. There was nothing MLB could do. And while you may be annoyed that today's game is going to be at 1 o'clock, even more so if I was a fan of the Braves Phillies, or if I was a fan of the Dodgers Padres, and I had tickets to today's game, I would be rather upset if they changed the game time of that game because they said, wait, the Yankees are going to bump you and you're going to move to a day game on 24 hours notice. That would not make any sense at all. So having gotten that mini rant out of the way, how are you doing, Jeff?
Not too bad. Yeah, I was disappointed that, you know, I didn't have a second game to watch yesterday. The first game was excellent. I think overall, you know, the playoffs have been, you know, a collection of fairly good games, but yeah, it was a little tough. I had to figure out something to do last night, but you know, that being said, I'll take the trade-off of having three games on a Friday where I can, you know, sit in the couch and relax and start off my weekend on a high note. So I'm looking forward to it today. You know, it's like sometimes you lose something one day, but you gain it back the next. So future Jeff is happy right now because I got plenty of baseball to watch today.
Future Jeff, which is turning into present Jeff real soon, because
yes,
we're recording this at close to 11 o'clock on Friday morning, and future Jeff will be here in 2 hours, basically. So future JJ is also excited. Yeah, but a very good. The thing I will say about these playoff series so far, we've had a lot of really enjoyable games. So before we turn this into a Yordan Alvarez appreciation podcast, which Mariners fans, I'm giving you warning, it's coming, because that's what we're going to do. But what else stood out from yesterday's game?
I think for me, you know, the big thing I was most excited to watch and enjoyed the most was just sort of that pitching matchup and that battle between Luis Castillo, Framber Valdez, you know, sort of the tie-in with Castillo and the Astros and the Mariners too, is they actually acquired him while the Mariners were in Houston. This is the first time that they've actually faced Castillo, I believe, as a member of the Mariners. So really interesting angle there. I think it brings another sort of element to this series. Obviously, when you're facing off against a guy like Framber Valdez, it does some things very similarly. Obviously, a left-handed pitcher, but guy that has secondary stuff that he can miss bats with, drives a ton of ground balls, similar to Luis Castillo. And it was just fun to sort of watch a game where two guys on the mound that were capable of generating outs in a variety of forms and fashions. And I think situationally, you know, that obviously has a ton of value. Despite the Astros being up 2-0, this has been a close and tremendously entertaining series, as much as any in the last few years, I'd even argue.
I really did enjoy also. That was two very good pitchers pitching to their level of ability yesterday. Two starting pitchers, I should say. And that's fun.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we want to see. That's where I do get. I like all kinds of baseball games. Do enjoy a 10-8 game, but I also enjoy. I had fun in that. I know some people didn't, but that Rays Guardians 15-inning game where I thought that was incredibly tense the whole game. But I thought that yesterday's Astro Mariners game again was a case of where it was going to turn on just a little something here, a little something there. I thought Julio Rodriguez had a great game, but I do come back to, was it the sixth? But somewhere in the middle innings, there was a backup slider that I thought like Rodriguez just missed. I want to say it was two strikes.
Yeah.
And games turn on things like that. Like it was not where the Astros wanted it. And it was where J-Rod wanted it, and he just missed it, which happens. But it was one of those things where you go, oh, that's how these games shift.
Yeah.
And the other thing with that is I came to a depressing realization yesterday as I watched Julio Rodriguez that, okay, I'll ask you, realistically, if with good help, I think what Rodriguez probably has 15 to maybe even 20 years of big league time ahead of him. Is that reasonable, Jeff?
Yeah, I think, absolutely. When you look at the level of talent that this guy has and how long players that are that good last, it's pretty remarkable, and he was in the major leagues really early. So he's not even going to be that old in 10 years,
15 makes him 36.
Prime.
Yeah. 15 makes him 36. 20 means he'd play to his early 40s, which I think is, again, that would be the upper end, but we just saw that with Albert Pujols. We saw that with, Yadier Molina. We've seen that with Adam Wainwright. We've seen that in several examples this year. But the depressing realization I have with that is I may be watching the first major league player who will still be playing when I'm retired. And
oof.
Yeah, that hit hard. That really did. But okay, we're going to spend a lot about basically so far the best hitter of the playoffs in just a minute. But before we do that, we have a quick break. Every deep playoff run starts with building an amazing team. Doing the same for your business doesn't take a room full of scouts. You just need Indeed. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. Don't spend hours on multiple job sites looking for candidates with the right skills when you can do it all with Indeed. Find top talent fast with Indeed's suite of powerful hiring tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. Hate waiting? Indeed U.S. data shows over 80% of Indeed employees find quality candidates whose resume on Indeed matches their job description the moment they sponsor a job. The right candidate is doing everything they can to find you, and if you use Indeed, you can be sure you're doing everything you can to find them too. When I've used Indeed at Baseball America, I've loved the way they've taken the hassle out of the hiring process. Indeed has saved me headaches. I can interview virtually with no downloads, plugins, or purchases. Do it all in one place with Indeed. After using Indeed's virtual interviews, employers like me have said that it saved them days of hiring time, according to Indeed data in the U.S. One of the other things I loved is it kept track of things for me when I'm trying to figure out when am I taking this interview, who am I going to interview today. So join over 3 million businesses worldwide using Indeed to hire great talent fast. Indeed knows when you're growing your own business, you have to make every dollar count. That's why when you sponsor a job, you only pay for quality applications from resumes in our database matching your job description. Visit Indeed.com/Baseball America to start hiring now. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America. That's Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Cost per application pricing not available for everyone. Need to hire? You need Indeed. And we're back. So, Jeff, I feel like yesterday, if you said, what is the key to the game? I will hand this to you. I will put it on a platter. What was the key to yesterday's game to you, Jeff?
Find a way to avoid Yordan Alvarez.
Yes. Yes. And there was no good way to do so. I mean, you have situations where I don't, he's not Barry Bonds in 2003 yet, where you're just like, I don't care how many bad base runners there are. We're just walking him. We're not there yet, right?
No.
But that said, I, the thing that I thought stood out from that is there was a debate after game one. Okay, you brought Robbie Ray in to face him. Is that really what you wanted to do? He hits lefties as well as he hit righties. Yesterday, what stands out is that's the pitcher that you want facing Yordan Alvarez, right? Like Castillo is the Mariners' best pitcher. Yeah. And it did not matter because he covers the whole plate. He hits righties, he hit lefties, he puts together good at-bats. We are watching one of the best hitters in baseball who's on a hot streak right now.
Yeah.
And when you see that, it gets really fun if you're an Astros fan, but it also gets really tense and utterly annoying. Like, is there a way right now, like, again, other than walking him, the thing that stands out to me is he doesn't have like clear holes in his swing. Mm-hmm. Covers inside, he covers outside, lefties, righties.
Yeah,
it really comes down to is just avoiding having guys on base in front of him right now. I feel like is maybe the other best approach. But yeah. That leads me to the question, which I don't think a lot of people have thought of. Maybe I want to give something on this that's other than, you know, he's really good. And if we say that, it's like, yes, thank you. We already knew that. But other than Yordan Alvarez, really good. I do want to ask you what this is. What would this Dodgers team look like if they hadn't traded Alvarez for Josh Fields? What is this Dodgers lineup look like if you just throw Yordan Alvarez into the middle of the lineup as well?
Oof. Padres fans right now are shaking and shuddering at the very idea of Yordan Alvarez being in that lineup. I'll make the answer really short and try to make my people from Boston feel better. Yordan Alvarez just would have been traded for Mookie Betts, right?
No.
That's my joke. But anyway, I mean, I think you look at it here, Justin Turner's their DH. They got Trace Thompson in left field. So I don't know, swap out Trace Thompson. Sorry, Clay and the Thompson clan, but swap him out, move him to the bench, and swap in Yordan Alvarez to left field or DH or whatever. And you have a lineup that's probably Mookie Betts, Trey Turner, Freddie Freeman, Yordan Alvarez, followed by Will Smith, Max Muncy, Justin Turner, Gavin Lux, and Cody Bellinger. Oh, and by the way, Joey Gallo, Miguel Vargas, and Chris Taylor are all on the bench.
This is a team that scored 847 runs this year and allowed 513, which is one of the greatest run differentials we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And it would have been even crazier if you just add Yordan Alvarez to that. And again, that is, I do also use Yordan Alvarez as the example. I always talk about how the cost of trading at the deadline is often quite low. When you do have exception, it's dark. And as great as the Dodgers are, it is incredibly important to the Astros. Like, that is one of those trades that is franchise altering. And the other thing that some people may find annoying that I will point out today is we are now far enough away. Yordan Alvarez is not part of, you can't bang a trash can and say he was part of it. This is effectively, there are still a couple of players left, but this is effectively a new Astros team. Mm-hmm. And they're still really good. Yeah. And I do think that because of the hatred in some cases that still lingers from what is now 5 years ago, I do think it kind of gets lost. As much as I talk about how great this Dodgers team and this Astros team is also a team that can go down as an all-time great. Look at how many wins they had in the regular season, how dominating they were in the regular season, how dominating their starting pitching is, which, by the way, is largely, yes, they have Justin Verlander, but largely homegrown. And
entirely.
It's just, I do look at this and I'll put it this way. It's been a great season for Seattle. It's been a streak ending season for Seattle. I do not like their chances of coming back to Houston. Even I'll put it that way. They'd have to come back for game five. What do you think their chances are for that?
Yeah, I think that they're, you know, I do think they're going to steal a game in this series. I think that Kirby at home probably sets up pretty well for them. And that's not to say they're not going to, the Astros aren't going to make it difficult. They obviously are. But I think these games have been too close for there not to be just, a little bit of chaos in terms of the Mariners stealing a game and making it a little bit tighter. Because as I said, these series, the series has been really close. These have been close games. The run differential between the two games is 3 runs. And I think if we look at it, then Seattle has actually led for a majority of the innings this season, this series. So as good as the Astros are, as much as you compliment them, as great as Yordan Alvarez has been, Seattle really has shown up. I do think there needs to be some credit due. They maybe haven't executed situationally in a few spots. There were some decisions that you can maybe debate with. But I think at the end of the day, when you take a step back, you have to say, hey, they're really hanging with the Astros here. And the differential of a couple days off, the home series, setting things up, getting the bullpen fresh again, and maybe deciding that you're just not going to pitch to Yordan Alvarez, because even when you throw him a sinker, his worst pitch, on the outside part of the plate, he still hits it 400 feet to the opposite field. So maybe it's figuring out just a few of those things. And just one point I wanted to jump in on, as you mentioned, with the Astros, this is also a new front office. A lot of the folks that were involved with some of those decisions front office wise have been replaced, on the analytics side, on the scouting side. They've gone back to in-person scouting again, which is something that was changed, under the prior regime in Ludnow. So I think we need to think about it differently, too, even from just a baseball inside baseball sort of standpoint. Things have changed, and there's some reasons to maybe not hold that all against them. And then the last thing I want to say is the really remarkable thing here about the Astros is their ability to keep together the core, but as each piece leaves, replace that player with somebody else they've developed internally who's really good. Kyle Tucker, more or less, sort of replacing George Springer. Jeremy Pena this year, replacing Carlos Correa. Obviously, that's not a like for like swap, but let's not ignore the fact that Jeremy Pena's had two of the biggest at bats in this series, arguably the biggest at bat outside of Yordan Alvarez's at bats in game one, getting on base there. He had a big double yesterday. He was 2 for 3. He's performing in that spot. And when he hits behind Altuve and in front of Alvarez, Bregman, Tucker, Gurriel, Mancini, that really brings sort of another dimension, another wrinkle to them. And he's a good defender. We saw, how good they can be defensively yesterday. Some good plays in the infield, particularly that throw by Altuve. So I think it's just their ability to execute. And then the last thing I'll say is their pitchers outside of Justin Verlander are all under contract until 2026 minimum. So we have another 3 years of these 6 starters under contract and control at minimum with the Astros. And when you think about the fact that they're a winning team, they're a competitive team, this window hasn't closed at any point in time. Oh, and they've been able to internally, homegrown-wise, rebuild their pitching staff on the fly. It's pretty remarkable, and credit to their front office for doing so.
Rebuild it on the fly, and like to a point where when we talk about Hunter Brown, we don't have an obvious – I think he's good enough that he's going to force his way into that rotation, but it's not obvious, which – how many teams are there out there that could have a pitcher of Hunter Brown's caliber and be like, oh, I don't know if he fits into the rotation? 2, 3, 4? I don't know if I get to that number of other teams in the majors who could say that. And I could say for a lot of teams where Hunter Brown would be penciled in right now to be their number 3 or number 4 starter next year with the idea that he could go further than that. Is that a reasonable – You do our Astros a lot. So is that a reasonable assessment for Hunter Brown?
Yeah, I think so. That's one of the remarkable things that I've said about this team is they have seven starting pitchers going into this series. They have a six-man rotation, and oh, they have Hunter Brown on the bench, who threw over 100 innings this year and certainly capable of going 4 to 5 innings and holding his electric stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it's a good problem to have, but something's going to have to shake out here, especially if Justin Verlander is back at Houston next year, because there just aren't enough spots and there's too many guys here who are major league caliber starting pieces.
It's crazy, but we'll get ready for a cavalcade of baseball future. Jeff's going to be very excited in about 2 hours as we three games today. We will have a lot of baseball this weekend. It's going to be fun. So we'll be back on Monday to recap what this weekend. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.